Welcome to the Speak Like a Leader podcast with John Bates.
Welcome to the show. With me today is my friend Kiri Marie Moore, and she is, boy, I guess one way to say it that would be an understatement is a powerhouse. Like this woman is a force of nature in just all the best ways. And if you want to connect with her, if you want to find her online, you can find her at the 1%movement.com. All written out, no numbers, all letters, the 1% movement. So Kiri, it's great to see you. It's great to have you here. Thank you for joining me. How you been doing?
Thanks, John. Also, always a pleasure to be hanging with you, having a conversation. And today, what excites me is the conversation we're about to, you know, go deeper into, and such a thing that is very, very close to my life and what I stand for and what I do every single day. So I'm really looking forward to being here and looking forward to where we go. And I always love conversations where I haven't been pre-asked questions, because I go, yay, we can kind of move anywhere and go anywhere. So looking forward to this. And I'm doing well. I'm over in Sydney, Australia, and it's a very wet day over here, and I've already been for my walk this morning, but I'm good. Excited and ready to see where and what we do today.
All right. Awesome. Well, you know, we met in a really rarefied, wonderful place. We met on Necker Island. Gosh, it's been like a year and a little bit, I think, ago.
Yeah. And way too long already.
Yeah. Right. Way too long. It's gone fast. I know that you are up to just gigantic things in the world, and that you work with leaders who are cutting edge and out to make an enormous difference. And, you know, the topic that we focus on here is leadership and communication. And I think you probably know that I like to say L equals F of C, right? Leadership is a function of communication. So I wonder if you could tell all of us a little bit about what you're up to, and, you know, maybe draw out a little bit of the communication lessons and insights that you've had out of that.
Yeah, like so many questions that you're asking within a question there. And firstly, I'd love to say I work with great global leaders and industry leaders in their own rights. But I really love that, and I think it's really important that we always say that I'm about increasing economic growth and culture impact at the same time. It's not one or the other. And in fact, every time you make a decision at the decision table, there is a impact of some sort being made. What if we could actually do that in a way that is going to impact in a way that's adding value to humanity, not taking away from? So if we can look at the lens at the decision table through the eyes or through this, you know, lens of humanity as stakeholders at the decision table. And so if we can create, then we take that as a lens, and then we create leadership solution pathways. And that really is by looking at the problem and narrowing that gap from problem to solution. And so the best way to do that is through communication. In other words, how do we communicate what is the problem, then what is the solution, and then, you know, the right pathway ahead? And when you've got the pathways right, when you're knowing what that is, that doesn't mean that we don't have to pivot when something hits the globe that causes, you know, and none of us have experienced that this year. I mean, there's nothing that's hit us that's been so different this year, right?
And yeah, we're talking in, you know, in December of the pandemic.
Exactly.
Year,
so it's not that we can't shift things or pivot, but we have a really clear pathway of where we're going from problem to solution. And here's the great thing when you've got that, is that those that come into your world also know how they can come in that door, what are the touch points along that way. So communication is really hard. And in my world, having worked with And I really want to be clear that I get to work with amazing people, but it's extremes. So it's from top decision tables where, you know, and you've been at some of those tables where we have sat with former presidents or whatever it is, right? And it's looking at different, you know, problems that are facing the globe, but then looking also at the frontline of humanity and going into the villages and speaking with the leaders of the village and sitting in the classrooms, figuring out what is needed for this village to be able to be sustainable, and then going to the chief and sitting there for hours trying to come up with a way that's going to help that village to keep going for the next generation and the generations to come. So I get to work with extremes, right from top decision tables to the frontline of humanity, looking at how can we close or narrow that gap from maybe what is being innovated, maybe what is everyone's thinking is the next way to do leadership, or the thinking around how to run companies or things like that, and going, what if we actually look through the lens of what is it that the frontline of humanity is needing right now? What is it that actually will be beneficial, that's going to be sustainable as solutions at the decision table? So it's a really beautiful mixture of being at very dressed up tables, very, you know, tables that maybe have not had much variety at it, to extreme tables or just really in the dirt of a village where you just sit and you're in amongst cultures that is amazing. So I've had to learn the power of communication in so many different cases, and it is so powerful in being a great leader.
Now, are there any situations that maybe aren't confidential that you could share with us an example?
That's a great thing to say, because yes, right. I get to work, and in the past it's been a lot of, you know, people have said to me, you're like the secret sauce and behind some of these greats that are doing amazing movements across the world. And it's true, and we're starting to bring on clients that are willing for us to move into. And one of the situations I get to look at, say, Jesse, do you know Eckhart Tolle? Is it,
you know, Eckhart Tolle?
Yes. So
an amazing, The Power of Now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I love that.
Okay, so I get to work with his son. And Of course, his son has taken over the company, but he also has his own thinking and his own where he wants to take that and what that would look like for him to lead in a way that brings his legacy forward as well. And so it's a beautiful mixture of looking at where father has brought company, looking at where he wants to take it, and then mixing that, going, how do I bring that to, you know, in a pathway forward that is going to get results that he's really excited about and wanting to leave behind us, his footprints. And so it's situations like that, which, you know, or it might be in the case of, I'm just trying to think of some other ones. You know, I got to, and I can't say the name, but I got caught into a situation where there was a person who, I just finished a VIP day, and someone called me in and said, Kira Marie, can you come? And I could sense it by the urgency in the conversation. And I was like, actually, I'm really tired. I've had a big day. Hold on. And, you know, they said, no, we really need you to come. And so I could tell that I needed to be there. And I was in Austin, Texas at the time. And actually what I was caught into was this beautiful man. He was, you know, he had been brought up in the Mexican ghettos, had seen his father die in a way that he shouldn't have. He had seen his mom doing things out of having to because of survival. And then he had brought up his siblings and had become this amazing heart surgeon. And you can tell by what he had become that he was a man who loved people, humanity. Anyway, one day at work, a guy had a beef with him and set him up and said he was taking drugs. And of course, he was not taking any drugs. He didn't even do it for personal reasons. So his credentials were taken off him. And the day that I was caught in was the day he had a gun. He had it in his hands and he was about to jump back into his red pickup truck and go and shoot that guy in the head that had framed him because he was at his wit's end. So you've got to understand, in that moment, I was caught in because what I do and what I teach and train around is that every decision we make, we're making it because we want an outcome. And so there's ways in which we are wired. And we can actually just sometimes we've got that wiring wrong. So in the case of that situation, the wiring was, I've had enough. There's no hope. I'm going to go shoot him in the head. I don't care about the consequences. But that actually wasn't a truth. And if I got down to it and within the next 2 hours, you know, he was ready to leave. He was ready to go home to his beautiful wife. He saw there was hope in the future. And none of that was me telling him. It was just rewiring the brain to a better decision that's going to be beneficial for him. Hello, and beneficial, of course, for those that were around them. So I get some pretty interesting situations, and I've got story after story of things like that.
Yeah. You know, I mean, one thing that I think is true, it's a side avenue from what you just said, but one of the things that I see more and more, and that I've been noticing for a long time, is that I do think that really great leaders love people. I just think that's just, you know, that's a piece of it. But now, can I ask really quickly, because I think people are going to be wondering, like, is this guy okay now? Did he ever get his medical degree? Is everything all
right? Yes, I opened a loop there. Good thinking. And yes, this guy is, and this is the amazing thing around what I teach is my IP, I guess, around decision making and decision thinking and really being able to create those pathways. And the thing in this case with this guy was I have never, ever done any follow-up. I've not done any consulting with them. I've not done any strategizing with them. I haven't, you know, done hours of counseling, whatever it is. But I have, of course, checked up to make sure that, you know, he's still going forward. And of course he is, because here's the thing. None of what I teach is around something that I'm telling you what to do. I'm merely asking questions that open up a lens in which you can now think through and then make decisions from that. And when you make that decision, you're wired to what I say is your decision DNA. And so when it's your decision DNA, you're motivated to do it, you're excited about it, you know that this is the important thing for you to do, and that's why it works. And so, of course, yes, he's still trying to get those credentials back and he's still with his wife and he hasn't killed anyone, and it's amazing.
Yeah. Now, you know, what you just said is something that I think is another hallmark of truly excellent leadership, which is digging in and helping the people that you're leading find their own intrinsic motivation to do whatever they're doing that you're leading them in doing.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
Can I switch something around and ask you a question? If I was to ask you a question, and that is, what are your drivers to do what you do, to lead in the way that you do? What would be your answer?
You know, what comes right to mind, Carrie Marie, is when I was in the hospital thinking I was going to die after losing my company where we had raised over $80 million. Then we went out of business in the dot-com crash. And I was in the hospital thinking I was going to die of an autoimmune disease. And I remember looking at my life and realizing how small and selfish it had been up to that point. And it's not like I was an evil, horrible person, but man, it had been small and selfish. And I remember saying to the universe, you know, I really don't want to go out like that. If you just let me live, I promise the number one thing that I will care about from now on is just making a difference. And I was not okay for a long time, but I lived. And every day since then has been total gravy, because really all I care about is making a difference. And so I think that's what drives me, is that I've seen that I have a gift, that when I share it with people, I get to make a difference for people who make an enormous difference, you know?
And so let me ask you another question. When you are making the difference, how does that make you feel?
Deeply fulfilled.
And when you're deeply fulfilled, how do you know that you're helping someone else?
Well, I hear what they say they're getting out of it, and I see the difference that it opens up for them, and I see the courageous steps that they take.
I love that. And when they get those courageous steps, when they're able to do what they're meant to do, how does that make you feel?
I'm really proud of them. Connected, really fulfilled, you know.
Yeah.
And
here's the thing. Are you more likely to get up every day if that's how you're going to be feeling?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it's great that you would ask that question, because I was having a really hard time getting up, you know, in about.
And you're probably not the only person. There's probably listeners out there feeling the same thing at that time, right?
Well, I mean, you know, I take the pulse, you know, and I do think that we're all in the same storm. We're not in the same boat. And I do think that we're riding similar waves, because it was, you know, early, mid November. And I was just having a really hard time. I was starting to get resentful of having to come sit down here in front of this screen that dogs ignore, you know, and I realized it after a little while, and I was like, wait a minute, I forgot what I'm up to, you know, and I reminded myself, and I went through, I have a little folder of stuff that I call sunshine, and I have the thank you notes, you know, and I have all that stuff in one place. And when I get to a point like I was in, I go look at that stuff and remind myself of why I do it. And yes, I started coming downstairs with a spring in my step again.
You know? I love that. Because guess what? This then comes into the culture that you start creating. And then, of course, the outflow of the results that you bring, your clients bring, and then the difference that you can continue to make as a leader across the globe. And that's the stuff that is so exciting and I think is absolutely fundamental, is knowing what those drivers are. So if you ask me what my drivers are, I've got four drivers. One is humanity. So you brought that up already. Humanity is a huge thing. I was one of those kids who had no voice, you know, went through a lot of tough things in my background. Anyone that would know me now, you know, that, and if I share some of that story, they go, oh my gosh, I never would have guessed that in 100 million years. And I go, no, because I'm a really different person to the person that had come into the world and was living as a young girl. And then I had to make a lot of decisions to change my directory of my life, right?
Yeah.
And so definitely humanity is a huge thing. I want to advocate and give voice to humanity, because I believe that every single person, no matter what you're thinking, no matter where you've come from, no matter whatever it is, that, you know, I know all of those things are really important. They're distinctions we bring to the table. But reality is, I believe a lot of the problems across the globe would change if we just start looking at humanity as a race. And that's what we brought to the decision table. So humanity, absolute driver for me. Next one is patterns. Why? Again, if we talk about the story of mine, it was really rough. It was horrible. I was in and out of different things that literally were life and death. And if I kept going on that, I wouldn't be alive today. I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing. I wouldn't be able to be helping change one life at a time, whatever it is, you know. And so patterns became an obsession of mine. What if we could, you know, it fascinated me that actually it didn't matter if you'd had Harvard training, and it didn't matter if you had been brought up with all these extra amazing things. Some people actually were more effective when they didn't have that. Why was that? And why do people make decisions that are wise and some make some really stupid ones, right? And so I became fascinated with patterns because I realized there was power in patterns, that we could grow much faster and more quickly if we were able to kind of hack patterns, right? So it became a fascination. The third one is culture. Culture to me, tribe builds culture, and culture is what is going to create what we're building across the world, every single one of us. And there's a huge conversation around that in the leadership culture that I hope we kind of dive down a bit today. And then global. You know, one of the things you said before, when you said about your driver of, you know, you loved helping people and seeing people really succeed in that way. Well, you know what works is when you are not having an in focus but an out focus, when it becomes beyond your walls and how can what I'm doing affect the community that I'm a part of, and then how does that community affect across the globe and what we're doing? And I think, you know, so global became such a fascination of mine and a massive driver because I realized that we can't just be that secret sauce. We actually need to be out there using our platforms to bring change. And part of leadership needs to be the fact that you are pioneering a different way and there's a pathway for others to come on that journey with you.
So well, it sounds like that might be a good lead in to telling us a little bit more about the 1% movement.
Ah, yes. So the 1% movement. So again, I get to work with some amazing people. And, you know, a lot of that is high priced for, you know, an elite kind of feel. And I never want to leave people behind on a journey. It is never part of my thing, right? And I was like, how do I involve, whether you're at the start of your journey, whether you're at the top decision tables, how do I involve you as a touch point into my journey? And I realized that one thing we can do, all of us, no matter what's in our hand, we can make a decision today. What is the one thing that you're going to do to shift the dial closer to make a difference? So imagine if I'm doing my 1%, you're doing your 1%, George down the road's doing his 1%. We start shifting the dial again from problem to solution, right? Because, you know, the global problems, they sometimes, you were at that table with me, it can feel overwhelming. It can feel like they're so big. What do we do? How can I make a difference? I'm just a person here who leads an everyday life. How can I make the difference? Well, everyone can, because what's in your hand? So I'm going to ask you the question, what's the one thing you can do to shift the dial by 1%? So I'm going to give you my example first, which is I want to get, and actually the 1% is, I know those that are listening won't be able to see this, but you can see this, John. The 1% is on the wall of humanity. What if I got 1,000 names on the wall of humanity of people doing their 1%? That would mean then that there's 1,000 people committed to doing whatever's in their hand right now across the world to make a difference in their world. So what can you do? What can you commit to? And I always say commit to something that is, you know that it's got a measurable. So for me, it's 1,000 people on the wall of humanity. And when I hit that, I'll up to the next level. So it's 1,000 people on the wall of humanity. And why am I excited about that? What does that show in data? It shows that there's data of people who are willing to make a difference and to start shifting from problem to solution across the globe. Mm. So what would be your answer in this one? What could you add up there, John? Because I'd love to see you up there and your one thing.
You know, I might need a little guidance from you.
Of course.
I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is that without the judgment that usually comes with being a vegan, but that's me, you know, bringing along all my prejudices. But I have stepped into pretty much being a vegan because of the difference that, one, I think just animal welfare is such a problem. Animal lack of welfare. And then the other thing is just that I think that, sustainability for life on Earth and climate change, the vegan plant-based is more sustainable. So, I mean, that's something in my personal life. And
the
health benefits,
by the way, I've studied a lot around being vegan.
Are very good.
No judgment here at all. And I don't, but here's the thing, like, I think you bring up an interesting concept, and that is judgment, because often when we make decisions, we think there may be a judgment to it. And I think that's where we've got to stop thinking that way and go, is this, and in fact, I was on a podcast yesterday and I said the same thing, that it's not a yes or no decision to make. It's actually, is this going to be more effective or ineffective? So is it going to be more effective for you to be vegan? Well, if it's going to have those benefits that you know that animal care is going to be much better because you're not eating animals, all those things that you brought up just then, right? Those are benefits. Yeah. It's going to be effective for you. So why would there be judgment? Because you know it's more effective for you to make that decision. So anyway, vegan, yes?
Yeah. I mean, and the other thing that I'll throw into that is that I'm committed to being an imperfect vegan, because I don't want to bring all that judgment. And I think it's more sustainable for me, you know, like I definitely have been on the other side of, like, you know, the judgment of a vegan, you know, so I don't want to be the person doing that. So that's,
okay, you know, so how would you roll this into doing your one thing to shift the dial by 1%? Is that you becoming vegan? Or what if you were to think of that as a, what if you were reaching out to how many people a week and you were sharing your stories about being vegan? Like, you would know that you would be helping maybe someone else to make a decision around that as well. I don't want to put those words into your mouth. I'm just giving you a thought of how you can now make that into a commitment, that it's not just about you and becoming a vegan, but it's about you and that impact that then that decision has on your community or and beyond.
Right. And so I think I'm getting zeroing in a little better on the picture. And you know, and my wife is the one who's doing the outreach for this, and I do support her. I'm not going to count that as my thing for this.
I support my wife. She's going to do this bit. Okay. That's a good one.
You know, I mean, it's a good question, because I think that where my passion and my impact might lie would be more in the realm of what it is I do in my day job.
Yeah, you know, of course.
Supporting people who are making a difference, and you know, my 1% could be contributing to the difference that X number of people make, or something.
Yeah. So how will you know that someone's made a difference? So it might be that, and I love this, because. And I think this is an important part of the conversation, because it's so easy for us, right, to go, I just want to see a lot of people change their lives. I want to see them be successful.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So how do you know that people have changed their life? How do you know that they're being successful? So we need to really set that as a target. So in my case, right, 1,000 names on the wall of humanity. Why that? 1,000 names mean that I know there's 1,000 people who are starting to commit to being different in their world and to start making a difference in their world. So there's an example of a measurement. And it might be that I reach out to 3 different people per week. There's different people doing different things.
Yep.
Whatever that looks like, that you know that you're going to be building a bigger. And so because they're reaching out with 3 people a week, they go, then I want to have 1,000 people in my community. And so because they're making differences with what they're talking about, what they're saying, we know that's going to make a difference, right? So it's a tangible, we can help and encourage and support. And I hope that one day as this grows bigger, that this is going to be a community that people can collaborate with as well and realize, hey, I love what John's doing over there. He's helping make, you know, build this out. How can I support him in that? Maybe I know someone that could support him in doing that, right? So that's, again, something bigger from it. So again,
one possibility that I hear is, you know, maybe I do some sort of a regular training where there's a community and I make it available to nonprofits that are up to big things in the world, right? So like I do a quarterly free training or something.
Perfect. So then it's what, like, is this once every 3 months? Is this so? And then just commit to that, and you know that's going to make a difference as you watch that build and you see the stories that come out from it.
Yeah. I mean, and I like your idea of building in a mechanism for accountability. Maybe I could ask people to, you know, the only thing I ask is that you let me know where this is making an impact, share the stories of the impact, you know, that kind of thing, so that we can actually see that there's traction in the world and not just, oh, it feels good and then nothing happens.
Yeah. So I don't know, on your website, you can just put a share a story, and and maybe what it is that you're going to run these, this webinar, whatever it is that you're going to run for the nonprofit. I'm going to commit to doing that and put a time on that, how many you're going to commit to or whatever, every month or whatever it is. And that we're going to build out, I'm going to have 200 or 100 stories on my website of people who have done or had change. And that would be a beautiful 1%.
Okay, good. All right. And so I can go to the 1% movement.
Exactly.
So you have to be careful.
Any other way to get to it? Because sometimes when people are on it, it's all just pretty new that I used to do that face to face and I never had a place for it. So we've just got that sort of up and happening. So sometimes it does crash. So theleadersmovement.com/The Wall of Humanity is another place to get it. So, but you know, just come to our, and if you have problems with it, we can make sure, you know, anywhere you find me.
So you do have to be careful if you ever do end up talking to Kiri Marie, because you don't get away with just having like vacuous discussion or anything, you know, you
gotta, no,
it's a good thing. You end up going away committed to something,
how many conversations, John, do you have that you go, that was an awesome conversation? I used to be on the speaking circuit here in Australia, and I was always told, oh, you're so motivational, you're so aspirational. And I was like, what, really, serious? You didn't get anything? Because how many times have you heard an amazing speaker and at the end of it you go, yeah, that was amazing, can't remember what they said, but it was awesome.
It was
life-changing. Okay, great. So how are you going to change your life? Actually, not sure. And one of the ones I went to an event, and it was a G20 here in Australia when it was here. I can't remember what year. And, you know, I was sitting with a group of people, and this just hit me really hard. I was sitting with a group of people. It was phenomenal what was being said by the front, you know, from these amazing leaders across the globe. And I was sitting with a group of people, and I turned around when there was a break, and I said, so what are you going to do with what you've learned now? And they go, what? That was great. So what did you get from it? It was great. And I was like, okay, so how's it going to change what you're doing in your company, your business, your community, your organization? It was great. And I was like, no, don't ever, ever come from something that I've been involved in that you go away going, yes, it was great, but nothing's changed.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I love that about you. You're committed to making it real, you know? So who's a great leader that had a big impact on you in your time? I mean, and listen, great leader could mean any great leader, right? It doesn't have to be some.
I know, what a definition, great leader. What is a great leader? And, you know, that's such an interesting question, because, you know, depending what lens you use, depends what perspective you have on a great leader. But I have to say, as a young person growing up, and in my latter teen years and early 20s, I really started developing a relationship with this amazing woman. She literally was like the Mother Teresa. She was a woman that used to go into India and do a lot of work on the ground in India. And I would, even when I left my hometown, I would come back, and every time I would go back, I would make sure there was some time in my schedule where I would, and no word of a lie, I would just sit at her feet just listening to her stories. And I listened because she had walked steps I'd never walked. She thought really differently. And she was a woman of faith, literally a woman of faith. And she had just given her life to what she felt was her purpose from God. And she had chosen, and it was funny because she's died now, but just before she died, she told me the story that she actually had a marriage proposal, but felt that she was dedicated to follow after God's purpose in her life. And she just dedicated her whole world to it. Now, for me, the way that she spoke, the way that she was honest and spoke about some pretty on the ground tough moments that she would face and have to escape it out the back way, out the back doors to escape the legal, you know, the authorities coming after her at points. And all she was doing was loving humanity. But I learned so much from that. And I learned so much of this amazing, strong woman who didn't have to be the loudest woman from the pulpit or the platform. She wasn't loudly spoken. She was just a really beautiful, peaceful, and soft-spoken woman, but she was so focused, and she knew where she was going, she knew what she was about, and she didn't waver from that at any time. And for me, that was the most, especially in my life, I had never had consistency, I'd never had a stable background, and she was like this stability, but with power, with presence, and with bringing change in everything that she got up every day and did. And I just thought, wow, if only I can have just even a little piece of that. And the other one, honestly,
it sounds like you modeled her. It seems to me like you modeled her quite well.
So here's the funny thing too, John, and I know it's kind of random, but it's the truth that the other one that I really modeled was Jesus. I'm dyslexic. I'm this person that was told you're dumb. You won't amount to anything. I was not the bright cat in the class. And I realized I wasn't the bright cat in the class because I didn't think like anyone else. I was different. I was so different. And I didn't understand or comprehend things the way other people. Now that's become my genius zone now. Yeah, yeah. But at the time I was a kid at school, that was not the way you're taught. That's not the way that you bring out. And so I was actually never, in fact, my English teacher said to me, whatever you do, don't ever write. You can't write. And he's right. I can't write about Romeo and Juliet, but boy, can I write about other things. So why I modeled Jesus in that way was because he would walk into, you know, he was this amazing man that was, you know, brought into this world, whatever your belief is, but with a platform to do great things, yet he could walk amongst every human being. And I was like, wow, that's kind of amazing. He can walk and he knows what to say. And I remember like just this one little story of the coin. And he was asked the question, what do you give to Caesar? And he goes, see whose head is on this coin. And he said, give unto Caesar that is Caesar and unto God that is God's. And I was like, dude, I want to be able to say that. I want that wisdom. Like, you have to go into a situation and go, boom, what if I could say those things? And so one of my prayers as a young girl, always growing up, was I want wisdom bigger than King Solomon and like wisdom like Jesus. Because I thought, dude, if I could walk around being able to say things like that, think like that, and imagine what change I could bring to the world if that was the case. So those are my two massive models in my life.
Well, and how fabulous that you got the introduction to them, wanted to model them, and from everything I can tell, are doing a fine job at it.
Thank you. But I think it's so important to have great models. And I think great leaders are not people that just tell you what to do. In fact, I think that's old school leadership. I always believe there's a real need for us to have a new approach to leadership. And part of that is this, that we're not in a telling. Old school leadership tells. It says these are the three principles to how to lead. And new leadership asks questions, uses different lens. And I always talk about the lens of human intelligence. What if we could actually increase our HI? What would that mean in our leadership? And a good leader, a great leader, is actually one that can really learn from their environment to be able to help others to learn from theirs. And then together we can make a difference across the globe.
Yeah. Fabulous. You know, the other things that I heard in what you were saying when it comes to great leadership is I think there is an element of consistency that really matters as a leader. And it doesn't mean being stuck in the same old ways. It's nothing like that. But there is something about the great leaders that I see. And I think that a lot of it, maybe it's consistency in principle and consistency of generosity. What do you think about that from what you've experienced?
Yeah, what an interesting question. And I think when I think of that question, I think of the fact, again, going back to what are your drivers, and when it's an in focus, we build things using a lens in which is just so insulated and isolated. When we start using a lens that is beyond our own walls, we realize that, you know, the effort that it might take to grow our companies, the next conversation that we might have is actually so important to have because it's beyond our walls. And I think if there's anything this year has taught us, being a challenging year in most cases, is that and it's funny because I actually started writing a book a year and a half ago, and here's what the title of it was: Isolation.
Oh, yeah, you were ahead of the game.
I was saying that it was an epidemic that I saw across leadership, but really across global humanity and in culture that I was seeing across the world. And it was kind of the 12 insights around what isolation was causing grief in culture, and then what if we wired to something that was different. And I think, you know, if we look at what when we're selfish, when we're insulated, when we're isolated, what that's doing to our leadership culture, we see devastation, we see destruction, we see things that are actually bringing, you know, I got to run this amazing, and I'm doing it annually, but it's a global human intelligence forum. And I had over 70 leaders across the world at the time when, you know, there was much division across the world. There was a lot of the racial tension, gender inequality stuff hitting the fan, and the challenges that were just, it's almost like everything was escalating right this year and at this time. Do you know the most powerful thing about that was that there was a room, a platform, a safe space that we spoke around. I opened the day because, you know, I've been the fortunate that I have partnered up with Martin Luther the Third and Owl Jr. You know, and with Andrea and Yolanda looking at how we can grow the beloved community. And so they had sent me the video that they then, you know, gave to the world afterwards. But I was able to open up the forum on the second day using that as an entrance into it. And then I had one of my besties over in Austin, Texas. We call each other twinsies, and he's American of African descent. That's how he describes himself. And he opened up with the opening keynote speaking for that day. Then I don't say interview, we have a conversation. So we had a conversation, and there was no question I could, you know, that was wrong that I could ask him. And then we had an open forum in a time where division was so rampant across the world. Yeah. It was such a beautiful, beautiful time. Like, it had me in tears when I finished that day, because I just realized that when you're generous, you create a safe space for people. You're willing to have a different conversation. It opened up for hope for humanity going forward. And I think that that's the greatest thing that we can bring out of this year, is we need to be more connected as humanity, but also in leadership. Instead of being these isolated little leaders across the globe, what if we connect more together and we're collaborating to change the conversation? How would that take it from division to inclusion? How would it take it from, you know, inequality to many who have different distinctions sit at a table and start looking through the lens of, you know, humanity being stakeholders at that table? Like, that would be huge, right?
I love it. Now, tell me, if people who are listening want to be there next year, is there a way they can...
Yes, yeah, so we'll start putting that out. Honestly, I had wanted to do it as a face-to-face thing. I actually was one of those people that got that dreaded lurgy in the first wave, and I got really, really ill. I was 5.5 weeks stuck. I wasn't even sure if I was going to make it through. And honestly, I had committed that if I was going to die, I was going to die listening to the voices of my beautiful family, and I wouldn't go to the hospital. And I just thought, well, if I'm going to make through it, if I'm going to get through this, I'm going to put on that conference or that event or whatever that I've been promising that I'll do every year. And so we just ran it. I sold people into it while I'm still recovering. And it was just one of those things. But I kind of remember when it's on next year, but we have already put it in the calendar. We're starting to look at how and who will be in that. But again, it's less, I get to have some amazing conversations like yourself with people who have access to amazing humans that are smart, that are doing exciting things. And I really want to take it away from, I know in Australia, we have to deal with what we call the tall poppy syndrome. In other places, it's breaking the ceiling. Others, it's the frog thing, you know, like the frogs are all
tallest nail gets hammered down.
All that sort of thing, right? And I really want to break that across global leadership and say, what if we actually can just get over those things, the ego things, the things that, yes, we're successful. I get to have amazing conversations with successful people that I often feel – absolutely. I'm privileged in that way, as in what a privilege to be at that table. But I also go, oh, I feel so bad because you need to be in on this conversation. And that's what that's about, where we can sort of, I've got some smart friends across the world, and I want you to be introduced into that and have part of this conversation. And then if there's anything that you're needing to ask or be involved or think, or how do I change this in my leadership culture? And so that's where that kind of came out of it. Again, using the lens of human intelligence, what if we had smarter leaders?
Yeah.
What if we had leaders that asked different questions? What if we had leadership that was less about isolation and building their own kingdom and more about going, well, there's problems that we're seeing as a collective across the globe, and we need to come together, and how can we do that? So it's kind of built out of that. So we're all in the new part of that, and you know, this was the first year, but it's back on again next year.
So you'll give me something I can put in the show notes so people could go sign up for that or hear more about it when you put it out and things like that.
Or if you go back to the 1% movement, anyone that's on that, they will get the latest when it comes out.
Perfect. Go to the 1%movement.com. Exactly. So Carrie Marie, you make me, I can't help bringing it up. I feel like I'm bringing this up everywhere all the time right now because I'm just so jazzed about it. There is this book that I just read that I want to tell you about, and then let's have a quick conversation about
bring it
what
on.
You think. So it's by an evolutionary biologist, Now, the funny thing, quick story, I met this guy, and he wrote this book with his partner, Vanessa, mm-hmm. Brian and Vanessa. I met him at an event, didn't know that he was the guy, but I had just read a theory about the cooperative eye gaze theory. And fundamentally, that says that human beings have whites in our eyes, mm-hmm. unlike any other primate. Unlike most animals, we have whites in our eyes, which means you can see where we're looking, which means we gave up being sneaky for something more important. And there's not even variability in this trait. Mm. Every human being has whites in their eyes. And the reason we did that is so that we could better see where each other are looking, better know what each other are thinking, and cooperate more effectively. And so I told him about this theory and how jazzed I was about it. It was so fabulous. And he looked at me after my 10-minute effusiveness and said, "That's my theory." So that's so funny. So I've been following him. He just came out with this book that he co-wrote with his partner, Vanessa, and it's called Survival of the Friendliest. And a lot of evolutionary biologists are starting to think that one of the biggest disservices that was done to humanity by the theory of evolution is this whole concept of survival of the fittest, yeah. because people have mistakenly made that mean the biggest, strongest, meanest. Not at all. In the Upper Paleolithic period, there were multiple species of humans. Denisovan, I've got a lot of Neanderthal, you probably could tell. But at a certain point in the Upper Paleolithic, they all died out and humanity spread all over the whole planet almost instantaneously. And the reason looks more and more like we self-domesticated and became more friendly. So, I think...
We were wild cats and now we're the friendly house cats.
Exactly. And look, exactly. Right. Like, and what it is that we were able, like any animal is pretty good at being friendly to people in their family. Right. Mm-hmm. Or maybe in their little group.
Or right? That look like us, sound like us.
Well, but what happened is we became good at being able to, so like if we were part of an extended tribe, we'd be able to become nice to somebody just because they were wearing the same little thing on their shoulder that we mm-hmm. were, right? Some identification that we were part of an extended tribe. And it allowed us to trade more broadly, to innovate together better and all this stuff. And we just exploded, right? Now, the chemical oxytocin, people call it the bonding hormone, yes. right? Like when we shake hands, when a mother's nursing, like oxytocin's flowing. The scary part of it, Carrie Marie, is that the other side of oxytocin is that it is the chemical that allows our brains, our entire, executive function, our higher brain to just shut down when someone says, "They're threatening us, they are animals, destroy them," right? It's where genocide comes from, right? How could we be so friendly and so good to each other and yet turn that off and just slaughter it?
There's so much around that conversation, because if you look at tribe is something that is familiar, something that is built into your DNA. It's something that has gone on from generations to generations. It's what you know. You eat, smell, live, right? That's your tribe. When you widen that, that opens up to a vulnerability to maybe safe, not safe spaces, to maybe a vulnerability where people do it differently and you may do something but that's not acceptable because that's not the way that it's been done in that tribe. So then that becomes, there's anxiety that might come out of that. There's issues that might come out of that. There's division that might come out of that. And it opens and opens, and there's so many variables, right? And that's right. The issue is that when we have different people at the table, if I bring it back to that, like I'm always looking at the decision table, if we have different distinctions at that table, there's a fear that our safe space becomes a vulnerability. We don't know, John, I might not know how to have a conversation with you now because I've not been to space, or I've not, you know what I mean? Like, because you've got the background there of space. It was all that. I'm visual. It just came in my head then, right? So I might not know how to have that conversation, and that might make me uncomfortable. And if you put it even back into things like introvert versus extrovert, I'm an introvert. I literally am naturally an introvert. I've learned to know how to communicate because I've wanted to. My drivers have been strong enough that I'll get out of what is uncomfortable for me and go and do that. Here's the thing that a lot of humanity is not willing to do right now, and that is to be comfortable with the uncomfortable. We have to be. You know, and the thing is, how do you be certain with an uncertain pathway? Well, we can be. We can actually be certain with an uncertain pathway, but there's ways in which to do that. And same with being comfortable. I can have anyone at my decision table and be comfortable with that, even though I don't know who you are, I don't know your background, I don't know what questions you're going to come with, because I'm confident with who I am, what I'm about, and I'm open to wherever this conversation might take us.
Yeah.
And I think that's the stuff that, yes, I get it. I get when there's a tribal thing. I get when there is, you know, then there's that disruption of that pattern of what was, and some do well in that. Others don't know how to cope with that. Others don't like change. So there's so many variables to why, I mean, yeah, to that whole conversation, and so many layers to that.
Yeah. You know, I mean, and one of the things that I hear in what you're saying is an idea that I got really clear that I was not good at being with uncertainty. And I actually really took on finding ways that I could be at ease with uncertainty. Yeah. And I think that this year has taught us that certainty and control and all of that, it's all an illusion. You know, it's just way more obvious this year. It always was an illusion. But I think that that's another big piece of leadership, especially now, is how can you be at least somewhat at ease with uncertainty? And, you know, I love you saying that you can be at ease no matter who's at the decision table.
And here's why, because that's come from that obsession of mine with patterns, knowing that there are patterns, there are certain ways. So when I meet someone, they might say something and I'll go, I reckon, and I play with this a lot because it's fun for me. I go, I think that they're probably, this is the way they think, or this is what they're doing. So I'll ask a question, and all of a sudden go down that and I go, ah, I was right about that. Or I ask a question and I go, I might have to change that a little bit. But that's fun. Right. That's patterns for me, right? And I think when you know there's patterns to things that are of certainty, so there's even patterns in uncertainty, and I love that. And I get to play in a way that I'm one of those freaks, and I am a freak because I remember, like I said, I wasn't that smart person, and I realized I am a smart person, but I've had to learn how to use that smartness. And that was because, like I said, I'm dyslexic, but I also, so I think quite backwards in a lot of ways, and then I have to put it forwards to make sure that I understand what you're saying and what you're asking there. And I also, so I work with my left brain and I work with my right. So I'm massively analytical, data-driven. I'm very strategic, logical, but I'm extremely creative, innovative, big thinker. And so I get to play at big thinking, vision, and I can go there and I love it. But I also then go to, well, where are we at now? What's our starting point? And then work it out strategically, how we can do it. So I can, and I think this is something, if you're wanting to play at a big level, that this is a thing that I always talk about, sustainable innovation. And to me, it's the capacity to scale. And so when you're able to scale, you're able to think really big, but you're also really good at what am I starting at now and shifting that dial closer to the bigger thing. So the bigger thing doesn't change. My big dreams, my things that I want to see happen don't change. What changes is sometimes we have to pivot because something will come along the way. But our big dream isn't changing. That's staying the same. So there's certainty of what I'm standing for, what I'm driven to do, what are the principles that I'm living by or putting into my business, company, organization. They don't change.
Yeah.
But sometimes, I learned this in a big way. My son, at 28 weeks, I was told my son was either going to be dead or a vegetated state at best. And that was because half his brain, like when they found out, was that half his brain was totally brain damaged and there were speckles of brain damage all on the other half of it. And so to be honest, I've talked to many neurosurgeons and in the neuro facilities of the church, of the hospitals, and they've all said to me, look, we just never see anyone function when they've got a brain like this. And so I always am a strong believer that we've got so many brain cells in our head. And I didn't understand why would we have all these brain cells, yet we only access a very few of them. And I was like, okay, cool. So that means in his case, he's got so many brain cells. And if I use the principles I do in business and thinking, then in theory, he should be able to access so many other brain cells and just rewire to those, but to create different pathways to get the result he needs. He's just going to have to maybe go a little more around this way or a big way around that way, or it's just not as direct. And I use the same principle in helping to figure out his next level. And this is the same I do in business. It's the same I do with leadership. It's the same everywhere, right? The same pattern. And the good story around this to close that gap is he's over 20 now. He, the side where he wasn't meant to speak, he speaks beautifully. Sometimes I want to shut him up. He is one of my heroes in my world, you know, because I think if he can get up every day with a smile on his face doing what he does, what a legend. Yeah. And, yeah. So we have such an amazing, I don't know, like so many pathways in which we can access if we're willing to go down them. Most people aren't. They think it's a linear one and it's never, ever a linear one. And that's where uncertainty will always rock your boat.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Well, that's amazing. I'm glad to hear that about your son. And you know, just to reinforce what you're saying, I do a lot of work with Johnson & Johnson, a lot of these companies, and I'm working with one of the guys at Johnson & Johnson who's in charge of their Alzheimer's division. And one of the things that he said is, you know, what's actually the amazing thing about Alzheimer's is how long it goes undetected because the brain is so good at coping with and rewiring around that growing amount of damage. And so, you know, it's just another data point for you that I totally agree with you. You know, it's amazing what's going on up there.
I love it. And that keeps me entertained when, you know, if there's not enough work to do, which of course is never the case, but, and I go down a little rabbit hole, it'll be, how can I hack, to make me more effective in accessing a different part of my brain, and I'm fascinated with it.
Yeah. Well, so listen, I know that we're at about an hour now, and I want to respect your time. I think we might be a little past where you promised you'd go, but I appreciate it very much.
All good.
Okay. So is there any one thing that you feel is maybe still left to be said before we go?
Yeah, I think if you were to ask me of the three things that really, is what I think leadership or where we're going, because I think it's always good for a leader to be strong in not just this is what's working. And again, going back to old leadership and a new approach to leadership, that I think old leadership really teaches you that this was the way to be a leader. This is the model in which to use, and you will only build great leadership if you do this. Well, it's got us to where we are, and we learn from some of those things. But honestly, if we are to, and there's a lot happening across leadership across the globe right now that is not so healthy and not going where we want it to go. I mean, that's an understatement, I know, but it's we need to say it, right? Like, we really do. And yet we're not willing to change where leadership's going. And I'm really strong on three areas that I think are going to help us to start moving into. And that is that, again, with a new approach to leadership, and that is sustainable collaboration. I think, again, going back to the impact of humanity as stakeholders, that if we bring humanity back as stakeholders at the decision table, and we collaborate as a collective, we're going to make better decisions as a leadership across the globe. And so I think that there's this, I love that. Sustainable. Yeah. See, that's the dyslexic. My brain is going faster than what my mouth wants to do right now. So sustainable collaboration is one of them. And number two, I would say, is sustainable innovation. And that is the capacity to scale, as I said earlier. I think that in anything that we are innovating as a solution to the problem that we're seeing, we have to be looking at how this is not just going to be the quick fix, which is what most leaders, or not just leaders, but humans want to do, or, you know, we're the company that shows you how to do this. Well, it might fix the immediate thing. It might band-aid it, but it's not necessarily going to be sustainable. And I think we need to really look as a leadership, how are we doing in building culture in whatever company you're running in or a part of, how are we creating spaces where there's sustainable innovation as part of that platform? And the third thing that I think is really important is sustainable evolution. And this is the long-term measurement of growth. As I started when I began saying that, you know, I don't think it's one or the other. I think absolutely we have to increase our economic growth and accelerate forward in our culture impact at the same time. And so it's not one or the other, but we need to do that through sustainable evolution. In other words, as a leadership, this is a journey, and we're on this journey together. How can we not say this is the proven way to do leadership, but this is the evolving as we continue the journey ahead of us, and those needs and whatever else is going to hit, those challenges, they're going to come. But how do we need to keep evolving, and what's that long-term measurement of growth? So there you go. Those are probably the three things that I'd really love to ensure that those that are listening, that we think of that as the new approach to leadership going forward.
Well, I think that it's very, very prescient and very true. And I love that you are amending sustainable to every one of us, because I think that that's what's becoming obvious, is that maybe we've done some things, but a lot of that is not sustainable. Correct. And I think that the evolution aspect, I mean, that's one of the things that I'm trying to contribute to by having conversations and having people like you come share things with us, is what got us here is obviously not going to get us where we want to go. So we've got to keep innovating and evolving and bringing into that lens and that picture and that approach sustainability. So
can I ask you a question on that one? Because I love the fact you bring that up and the importance of that. Excuse me for a minute. And I love the fact that you realize the importance of this. So you've heard that, you know the importance of it, but how can you and I, or you and what you're doing, how can we do that more effectively?
Well, I think the first thing is just being aware of how important it is. And I think there's, it's a big deal to amend sustainable mm-hmm. in front of each one of those things, because those are all conversations, right? Evolution and innovation.
Yes.
But to keep bringing that sustainable aspect of those things mm-hmm. and then to really to be in the inquiry and in the exploration of what is the evolution of this, because, you know, top-down leadership, I mean, Kieran Marie, at the beginning of this thing, I was talking to somebody whose boss was saying, okay, everybody, we're all going to get on Zoom in the morning and I'm going to have you point your camera at yourself and your keyboard. And then I'm going to watch you all work.
Wow.
That does not go so well, you know? And that, okay, so we've got to evolve past that, because number one, that never really worked very well anyway, but in a distributed virtual environment during mm-hmm. a pandemic when everybody's freaking out anyway, that's not going to work, no. You know? So I think that we just need to keep thinking sustainability and evolution and innovation in mm-hmm. in the context of what's actually going on and just how existential some of the threats we face are. And now, look, I get that was not a super great give you the where the rubber meets the road answer.
No, but this is like, it's going back to that thing of, I don't ever want people just to hear things. I actually want us to go, well, you love that. You see the power of that. So how does that now come into what we're doing or what we are doing or can do? And so I ask that question, and it's never because I want the right answer again. It's because I want to be more effective. And maybe you're going to say something that I go, I could put that into what I'm doing. And that's what I think to me is what leadership needs to be.
Mm. Yeah. Good. Well, I agree. And I appreciate you joining me and sharing this with us. And and I think we'll have to do this again.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right, good. Well, so thank you very much, Kieran Marie. And so thank you, everyone, for joining us. And we'll see you next time.
Absolutely.
And thanks for coming.
Thank you for joining the Speak Like a Leader podcast. Go be awesome.